This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Smart Card World. We're about to speak to Manuel Albers, who's the regional marketing manager for Philips Semiconductor's ID product line in the Americas. Welcome to Utopia Media's Smart Card World.
Thank you, Mark.
Maybe you could start by giving our listeners just a little background about Philips Electronics as a whole and where your operation fits into their structure.
Well, of course I will. Thank you. Philips Electronics is one of the world's leading electronics companies, and it has a number of five or six divisions that are operating a global business in the lighting business, in the medical business, and also in the consumer and semiconductor business. Philips Semiconductors is, as it now relates to the identification market, a market leader in supplying chips, that is wafers or packaged ICs, into identification applications, which includes smart card ICs for both contactless, but also for dual interface smart cards, as well as for RFID, which are ICs that typically go into the into smart labels or into tags to track objects, and also into ICs that are for the reader side that read out those tags and labels or smart cards or smart objects.
Okay, could you distinguish a little bit among RFID, contactless smart cards, and how smart passports fit into that structure of definition?
I'd be happy to. The first technology that was introduced in volume into the market were smart cards, and they originated from applications like telephone cards and health insurance cards in Europe, and then quickly also spread into the use of subscriber identification modules, so-called SIM cards, for cellular phones. From there, there is a second wave also emerged on the purely contactless side, so-called RFID chips, for the use in tracking objects. So that started with animal identification-like applications, mobilizers, as well as as well as tags and labels that went onto objects for supply applications for example, factory automation.
Okay, now what all of these have in common essentially is that they're integrated circuits, microchips, that have something in the way of a CPU, something in the way of a storage, and some way of doing input-output, right?
Well, the main difference in between smart cards and RFID chips in general here is that smart cards, yes, indeed, use a microprocessor unit as a core, whereby RFID chips are typically only smart memories.
Okay.
So you have a memory within it, within contactless interface, that allows you to read and write data into and out of the tag, whereby smart card technology is really based on a secure microprocessor with encryption capabilities, typically larger memory amounts, and intrinsic security features that prevent you from getting data out of the IC by tampering with the chip itself.
Right. So essentially, RFID is memory only, and it can be told to remember something. It remembers it. It reports it, but it can't do any processing, which a contactless smart card, given that it has a CPU and the ability to run what's essentially an operating system, can do encryption and other security preservation functions.
That is correct.
Okay. Then within that context, what are the special attributes of a smart passport?
A smart passport is very comparable to a contactless smart card. So again, you have a microprocessor unit as a core, and instead of, as the first applications like GSM cards, had a contact interface, contactless smart cards like this contact interface, and have an antenna that allows the user to read and write data into the card and have it processed in internally. A smart passport now is just another form factor for such a contactless smart card by embedding the chip with an antenna into a layer of the passport booklet instead of into a plastic into a plastic card.
Okay. Now, that's what a smart passport is. It's essentially a contactless smart card core in a different form factor, namely a passport rather than a credit card type device.
That is correct.
Okay. Now I think we understand what a smart passport is. How many of them are out there so far? Which countries, if any, are using them at the present time?
I believe that the only country that has already started to deploy smart passports is Australia.
Right.
And I believe they are only in a trial stage at this point in time.
Now, has a decision been made in individual countries or globally that this is the way to go, or is that still a question that's up in the air?
No, it's very much so. The European Union has made an announcement that they will start by summer of next year through its member countries to issue smart passports. One of the first countries to begin with this is going to be Germany. They have already gone public and have announced that they will begin issuing smart passports equipped with a contactless smart card chip by summer of next year. And they have announced that they will primarily use chips from Philips for this purpose, and also chips from one of our German competitors.
Okay, now, given the way technology, both like the idea of having CDs and CD players, the smart passports need smart passport readers, will the ability remain for essentially bilingual use for, say, German smart passports for countries that don't have the readers yet?
Yes, primarily the first and foremost feature that is going to be included in these smart passports is a digital image of a picture.
Right.
So, and that takes care of the bilingual issue, I guess.
No, I meant in terms of if a person with a smart German passport goes to a country that doesn't have smart passport readers, will all of the essential data still be readable by the officials in that country?
Oh, absolutely. So from the outside, the passport itself will most likely not look any different to the user than the current version.
Okay.
Only that it now also contains a contactless chip that contains security features such as a digitalized picture that makes fraud or that makes the counterfeit of such a passport so much harder.
Right. In other words, it'll still be usable in the essentially analog realm, but it will be digitally capable for those countries that have the equipment to read it.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Tell us what the ICAO is and what the importance of document 9303 that they've published is.
Well, ICAO stands for the International Civil Aviation Organization, and I have to admit that this document that you just referenced doesn't immediately ring a bell, but I have to believe that this is a document that pretty much specifies the features that such a contactless chip needs to offer in order to meet the requirements of ICAO for the use in contactless passports.
That's right. It's for the ISO, the International Standards Organization. And how does that relate to what Philips has in its products?
Well, one key element of specification is that the IC itself, and that is the relevant part now to Philips Semiconductors, meets the ISO 44443 standard.
Right.
And also the appropriate encryption mechanisms that are required by the individual countries issuing passports.
Okay, right. So, yeah, go ahead.
So for that matter, for us it's important that, A, we have to make a chip that meets the respective security requirements, that offers the required features on the chip, and that also offers sufficient memory to store the respective applets as suggested by ICAO. So in this case, it means a passport typically is required to offer at least 64 kilobytes of E2ROM to store a number of cryptograms on the chip itself.
Okay. Now, you've said that Germany has adopted this and will be implementing it using Philips and other companies' ICs. What are the prospects for other countries? Which other countries are further along in the process of adopting this technology?
The only other country that I can speak of at this point in time, because they have also just gone public beginning of this week,
right,
is Austria. Austria has now also announced to start issuing a smart passport beginning summer of next year. And again, they have selected Philips as their single source supplier for this solution.
Okay. Now, say a little bit about what's involved from the point of view of the traveler, the passport holder, and the government in terms of the collection of the biometric information that presumably will be stored on this chip. What's the process in general likely to be like for that?
Well, I don't have the exact details of how the data collection process will work. What I imagine, or the only difference that I can imagine to the way how you obtain a passport today, is that when you submit your form to obtain a passport, at the time in the office when you submit this form, they will take a picture of you with a digital camera.
Right, and presumably they will take your fingerprint and they'll take your iris scan.
Well, in the first stage of the issuance of smart passports, most countries will use digitalized pictures only.
Okay.
Later on, these countries have announced that they will also add fingerprints and potentially iris scans to it, but that is, I believe, not any earlier than 2008.
Okay. So the principle essentially is then that by taking a digital photograph and encrypting it, storing it in the chip, it's not going to be possible for someone intending to forge a passport to take a picture of a person who isn't the person represented in the passport and paste that on somehow, as we've seen in a lot of movies, where they paste the fake picture on. That won't be possible because the chip will be loaded with the encrypted and digitized image of the passport holder, and it can't be forged, or can it?
No, that is a correct statement. The primarily security feature that the chip offers you is that it is locked.
Right.
So in order to access the chip's memory, you would need to obtain this key to even be able to have the reader talk to that chip inside the passport. Then you have to store the data inside and have to encrypt it according to the encryption mechanism that the respective country is using.
Right.
You have to lock it again.
Okay. Now, talk about A and B versions and how that relates to readers that need to be able to read the passport.
Yeah, that goes back to the ISO 14443 standard.
Right.
Which offers two options, type A and type B. And the primary difference in between these two options is the modulation that they use. While the Type A technology uses 100% modulation, the Type B uses a 10% modulation.
What's being modulated?
The field itself that provides the that basically enables the reader to talk to the card or the passport and vice versa.
Okay.
The electronic field. The electronic communication between the reader and the passport itself.
Okay, was there some reason why they ended up with two standards instead of one?
Well, I guess it goes back to patents that were available at the time.
Right.
While Philips invented the Type A technology, there was another company that invented the Type B technology.
Right.
And when you create a standard, both technology providers came to the table and offered their intellectual property at non-discriminatory terms to create the standard in order to enable a market to evolve. And this is where the ISO committee made sure that it didn't favor one technology over the other, but they said, okay, if we cannot settle on one single technology that satisfies all technology providers, well, then we're going to offer two options.
Okay, so this is a little bit like beta versus VHS. It's a little bit like HD DVD versus Blu-ray.
Not quite, because it doesn't take as much of a leap of faith or of a technology invention to have a reader that can actually read both formats.
Okay.
It is probably much more a challenge of a recorder that supports both beta as well as VHS or Blu-ray as well as HD.
So in fact, that the readers that Philips makes can read both?
Yeah, for sure the Philips reader ICs do support both modulation types, but in general there's a broad variety of reader chips and readers for that matter available in the market that support both modulation types. So it's a very small technological step to support both reader types.
Okay, say a little bit about Philips' competitive advantage and why you think countries adopting this standard, method of passport construction ought to go with Philips.
Well, there are primarily two reasons. One reason is that Philips has invested early on into contactless technology, so both into contactless smart card technology as well as an RFID technology. So our track record goes back like 20 years. So Philips was among the very first players in this market. And on the other hand, Philips was also the first or among the first companies to invest into high secure smart card ICs. So Philips was, for example, the first company around 1990 to introduce a smart card chip with an onboard crypto engine. So this has given us a lot of experience and a competitive edge now to combine these two features into a single chip and to offer that reliable and replicable to the market, so that readers and ICs that are out there are actually interoperable with each other.
Okay, could you give an estimate about what this is going to add to the cost of each passport, assuming it's a country of that's issuing millions of passports? What's the unit incremental cost that this will require? And we'll answer that first, and then I'll follow up.
Well, that's hard for me to estimate, because we, of course, only have visibility over the chip price itself. But to implement such a chip into a passport doesn't only take into account the cost of the chip itself and the packaging of that chip, as well as the antenna, but you also have to have in mind what kind of infrastructure you have to put in place that eventually also then influence the cost of the passport itself. From some statements, I believe that the cost adder that is being passed on to the passport user is around 10 euros and 20 euros.
Okay.
Roughly.
Which is about $20 then.
Roughly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And say a little bit about the partners that you're going to partner with. You're essentially making the chip, right?
That is correct, yes.
And then who do you pass that on to, and what's the relationship between the government, the your partners, and Philips in terms of the whole process?
Well, if you will, Philips is at the very beginning of the value-adding chain. And historically, we have been working with a very broad base of suppliers in the market that goes back to the early days of MIFARE, the MIFARE technology, which is the leading contactless smart card technology in the market today.
Right.
It's close to 600 million cards in the market today. And MIFARE was introduced in 1994. So ever since then, there has been a growing number of companies who have specialized on the embedding of contactless chips into cards and inlets and inlays. Inlays are now the form factor that is also being incorporated into contactless smart passports. So if you look at the number of card manufacturers in the market alone who can issue and offer MIFARE cards today, the number is in between 50 and 100 companies worldwide. On the reader side, the number is beyond 300 today. So that is a very large base of companies who can offer ISO-compliant, ISO 44-3-compliant solutions for cards, and it's for many of them, it's only a very small step to then also offer smart passport inlays, as from the outside, the chip package itself looks exactly the same as a MITRE chip package.
Okay, now, yeah, go ahead.
So the only difference that you really have in between those manufacturers who can make MITRE cards and those who can produce passport inlays would be the security evaluation of their facilities.
Right.
And that would obviously then be an investment to be made.
And that essentially be a decision made between the national governments and those companies.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, we talked about the unit cost. What can you say about the larger context in terms of what it's going to cost to make this upgrade and whether it's going to mean more efficiencies and lower operating costs or whether it's going to mean equal or higher operating costs and what the benefits in terms of added security will be?
Well, I guess that depends again. Many companies have already made investments into their into the security of their facilities, as they also, for example, produce banking cards.
Right.
And the security requirements for banking cards or to make banking cards are also fairly high.
Right.
So I would say that the difference in between making a secure banking card or a secure passport is probably very comparable.
Okay.
So,
but both in terms of the expense and the added security benefits.
With regard to the expense, I see a challenge if a requirement of the respective government was that the production of those secure inlays for the passport has to be within the country that is issuing the passport.
Right.
That would obviously require the respective supplier to set up shop in the respective country.
Well, how does that work with bank cards now? Are they generally globally outsourced, or do they have to be done in a single country?
They are typically globally outsourced.
But passport inlays are likely not to be because of national issues.
I have to believe that is the case, yes.
Okay.
That the government considers this as much more sensitive than, for example, the banks regard the actual production plate of the card, whereby the personalization of the card in itself to the respective country that is issuing that is hosting or where the respective card issuing bank is located.
So essentially, the economy is more globalized than the polity is what you're saying, essentially. The banking system is more globalized than national governments are.
If you so will.
Right.
I guess it also goes back to the... I guess countries want to be are more sensitive about being dependent on other countries
right.
to obtain both their, for example, their the passport documents as well as, for example, their money notes.
Right, exactly. Okay, say something about the trade-off between privacy and security and how much individuals need to worry about their data being accessed by individuals or groups that shouldn't have access to it using the Philips ICs and smart passports.
Well, the IC offers all the features that are required in order to prevent any security leakages or privacy leakages and the like. So the real challenge is to make use of all these security features that the hardware itself offers. And if you look, for example, now at the German government, who is now the first one who has gone public with their exact plans and the suppliers that they're going to use to issue their smart passports, they have pretty much set the standard now also with regard to security, because they were very sensitive about that the information that is stored in this contactless chip cannot be read out involuntarily. So What they have done is they have come up with a concept that requires a line of sight communication through an OCR reader in between. Well, it's a reader itself onto which you lay your passport.
Right.
And the reader is going to read out a number string from the document itself.
Right.
The page of the passport, and this string of information is going to be part of a key that actually opens up the chip itself inside the passport and allows the authorities to read out the information stored inside the chip.
So it's not going to be possible for some a malfactor in the airport to run around skimming people's data?
No, because the only thing that he could do is he could potentially have the chip send out a serial number that is required by a reader to distinguish when you, for example, present several cards or several documents to a reader. But this number has nothing to do with any information that is stored inside the chip. So at the end of the day, unless you have access to the data that is stored inside the passport written onto the on the first page and can use that in an encrypted way to open up the chip, you cannot talk to the chip at all.
Oh, I see. Okay. In other words, there's a machine, there's an OCR, optical character reader code that factors into the through the database to be able to open up the chip in the first place.
Correct. It's like a key that
right.
you require in order to open up the lock that closes or that that basically locks the chip itself. And once you have opened that lock, you are able to get access to the information stored inside the chip. But even then, that information that is stored inside the chip
right.
is encrypted.
Right.
So even once you have access to that data itself, it will not tell you anything unless you have the encryption key to decrypt that stored information.
So it's a two-level process.
If you will, yes.
Okay.
You can even go one step farther because what has also been discussed and explored at, for the time being is to include metal fibers inside the passport's booklet. So
also known as a Faraday cage.
Exactly. So, and following the same principle, it prevents any communication with a chip as the chip is not capable with its antenna to communicate through metal.
Will the German passports be using that Faraday cage?
You got me there.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. What's the status of negotiations? Well, you can't go into the details, but what do you understand is the status at the U.S. State Department for the adoption of smart passports?
The State Department is currently still in a stage where they have selected finalists among potential suppliers for their smart passport program.
Is Philips included in there?
Yes.
Okay.
But Philips is not a one of the selected suppliers of the inlay, which is important to make this distinguish or to distinguish here, as the government or the General Printing Office has issued a tender to find suppliers for a passport inlay. So that includes an antenna and the chip. Sandwiched already in between two layers of plastic that can then be integrated into the passport itself. So, and Philips is not offering this type of service. Philips is offering the chip, but solutions that are among the finalists to the GPO contain a Philips chip, yes.
Okay. Now, what overall do you see as the trend line here? Will this technology be widely accepted when everyone goes to China in 2008 for the Olympics? Do you imagine that there will be a certain percentage, a significant percentage of world passports that will be using the smart passport technology by then?
Well, I would certainly say that the majority of the visa waiver countries of the U.S. will have issued contactless passports by then.
Right.
However, the respective governments are also not mandating the use of these new passports because the old already issued passports still remain valid.
Right.
So I believe we will see a migration over probably the next, I don't know, probably 10 years until we will see a good coverage among these visa waiver countries with smart passports. I believe that many citizens will see that using a smart passport is much more convenient and allows them to speed through the customs quicker, which is probably going to increase the adoption rate of this technology. And also outside of these visa waiver countries, we see many, many countries working already on the implementation of smart chip technology into their passports, as it helps them to A, increase the security level of the passport itself, and B, also then to increase the speed at which they can move visitors through the customs.
Now, as this is done, it will be done on a global standard, as we've discussed, so that smart passports from any country will be readable by smart passport readers in any other country. Is that right?
That is correct, and that is assured by the compliance with the ISO 14443.
Okay. Now, what does you were just talking about how people having more convenience and speed of passage here will convince them to tell their friends that it's a good idea, and essentially it'll permeate throughout this ecosystem. What are the applications of these Philips IC smart passport chips for internal use, and how do you expect the back and forth to go between bank cards, smart passports, and internal national ID documents?
What exactly do you mean by the forth and back?
Well, will these chips be usable? For example, in the United States right now, the Real ID Act has been passed, and it's going to require each of the 50 states to have a common machine-readable technology in the driver's licenses that they issue in order for those driver's licenses to be valid for federal purposes, for example, boarding airplanes.
Yeah.
Is there a market in state driver's licenses in the United States under the Real ID Act for the technology we've been talking about here for smart passports?
Well, I would certainly see it as a logical next market to adopt this technology, because this technology, A, is the most secure type of technology that is available on the market today, and it's also very convenient as it doesn't require any moving parts in the reader, on the reader side, for example, that is subject to wear and tear. And in general, if they selected the use of smart card technology, then the connection to, for example, contactless banking cards and smart passports would be that most likely also this type of application would select the ISO 14443 standard as a respective standard to use and to apply, as this is the most mature and most advanced technology available, allowing for both high data rates for data transmissions in between the card and the reader, as well as for the highest level of security as it relates to the chip design and the encryption features made available by the chip itself.
Is there any technical reason why the smart passport, which we all know as a booklet that has these inlays, couldn't be converted over time to a smart passport, smart card in the form factor of a bank card that will contain all of the digital information, the photo, the iris scan, a fingerprint, and the other information, so that that card rather than a booklet could be presented?
I could see that from a technical perspective.
And visas and information stored on the card as well by the authorities who want to say you're entering the country at such and such a point at such and such a time, that information would be stored digitally within the card.
Yeah, but there's no reason that would prevent you from doing that other than that you would really have to make sure that depending on where your citizens want to travel,
right,
that all these respective countries
right
have the required equipment in place.
Right. Now, within the United States, the creation of the Real ID Act and the fact that the 50 states need to meet the same standards and the integration of databases among the states essentially means that there's a national ID created by this, although people who don't like it complain about it. People who do like it say it's a good idea. Is the creation of these standardized electronic smart passports with a global standard harking back to databases which are increasingly integrated the functional equivalent of creating a global passport?
Well, I'm not sure about that. It's still up to the respective countries' authorities to define what type of information they want to store inside a passport or an ID card for that matter.
Right.
And what type of information is required to identify yourself.
Right.
For the various purposes.
But this, in fact, creates a technological platform that would allow for both unity and diversity globally, so that all nations would have a certain set of data points that could vary from country to country, but the essentially the structure in which they're presented would be a global one.
Well, yes, and so did the OCR reader, and so did the Mac Stripe, and so did the barcode.
Right.
But we're really talking only about a technology here.
Right.
That is more advanced and much more secure than previous ones.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's just a means to store information and to provide and to make information readily available.
Right. Now, this technology can hold on the same document, the same card, the passport information, the national ID information, banking information, medical information. There's really no technical limit to the integration that could take place here, is there?
I don't think there's a technical limit to it. However, I believe there are many practical limitations to it, and not the least one of it being, would you want to bet or would you want to have all your identification cards in one, and then running the risk if you lose that one how many offices, how many departments will you have to see in order to get a replacement for that?
Right. So you're saying that while technically it would be feasible to put your banking, medical, and identification information on a single card, that it's likely that for the foreseeable future these functions will be divided among multiple separate cards?
The technology certainly allows for it. And in reality, is that feasible? I'm not so sure.
Okay. Why don't you wrap up by telling us what you see for the next 2 or 3 years as the future of the smart passport and Philips' role in creating it?
Well, in the next few years, I expect that all of us will get in touch with contactless smart card technology one way or the other. So definitely with the issuance of contactless smart passports, but more likely also with now the increasing deployment of contactless smart cards that's going to make purchases much more convenient and more secure for us by having a secure smart chip inside a credit card that you use for your purchases at various drugstores and movie chains.
And Philips is in that market space as well?
Certainly, yes. Philips is among the market leaders for contactless technology.
What we're talking about here are contactless payment cards, and you're saying Philips is well represented in that area as well.
That is correct, yes. So Philips, as I said, Philips has a very long history in contactless smart card technology. So while the very first application was public transportation, that has now been issued, I believe, roughly 600 million contactless transportation cards. The next applications that are about to take off now are definitely contactless credit cards and debit cards, happening and spearheaded this time here in the U.S. with Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. And very soon, that's going to be the next step, we'll be able to have these applications, and you referred early on to multi-application use. We're going to have these type of applications also residing, for example, on your cell phone, so that you can use your cell phone to also pay for your purchases by having a smart contactless chip instead of being inserted into a card, being installed in your cell phone. And you can just use your cell phone in order to make your purchase.
And that will work both essentially face-to-face as well as distance. You can, if you're driving along, you can order a pizza and, on your cell phone and pay for it through your cell phone and then pick it up.
Yeah, well, I'm primarily now referring to the contactless payment feature, which again is linked to the ISO 14443 standard.
Right.
That really, limits you to 10 centimeters of operating distance.
Oh, okay. So essentially you'll be waving your cell phone in front of the contactless plate.
That is correct. Instead of holding your card close to the contactless reader,
right,
you use your cell phone and hold it close to the contactless reader.
Okay. So it's only one step away from sort of implanting that, so people just put their hand in front of the plate and walk off with their purchase, huh?
Well, I've heard about an installation like this in Spain at a golf club where you can have a chip being injected in your arm, I believe it is, and identify yourself with that chip at the bar to order your drink. But apart from that, I believe that this is a little far-fetched.
Right, a little far-fetched. But of course, if the chip is implanted for ordering drinks, you won't have to. If you become too inebriated to get your card out, you'll just have to wave your arm and get another drink, I suppose.
I suppose that is one of the advantages, yes.
Okay, good. I want to thank you very much for talking to us today about the future of smart passports and Philip's role in them, and I hope we can talk again in the future as deployments continue and we'll have more experience in this area to talk about.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.